Welcome back to the podcast. Gabe, Giannis, and I, we are joined with Sal Frizzella today. Sal Frizzella and I have been friends for a super long time. He's someone that I look up to as a husband, as a father, as an entrepreneur. He is a total badass as a president of First Form. We've known each other for a while. We've always connected to doing hard things. But today, we talk particularly about things that really matter to Gabe and I. And I know many of the people listening about being a father, about being a husband. Gabe.
Yeah, man. I mean, we've talked to Sal in the past, and I think that many times we've really had business topics to talk to him about because he's an awesome entrepreneur. What I loved about this conversation is we really took it to being a dad, being a great husband, how those things tie together. Talked about the game of baseball, which I absolutely love, and tied that into everything.
Golden Sombrero, is that what it was?
Golden Sombrero, that's right. So yeah, man, I hope you guys enjoy the episode. And before we get started, if you like the show, if you like this episode, please subscribe either on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It goes a long way to help the show. We appreciate you guys listening, but if you could take that extra step, we would really appreciate it. But yeah, enjoy this episode, Sal.
Let's go. So it was a couple weeks ago, I was messaging with you and you said that you were going on a trip with the family. And then you wrote back to me, you're like, hey, we're prioritizing more travel lately. So I kind of wanted to start there in our conversation because why are you guys prioritizing more travel in 2024? What sparked that decision? How'd you come up with the conclusion? All that kind of stuff. And then how has it been so far? Because we're in February. How has it been so far?
Yeah, no, listen, I look at when you're building a business, it's very easy because this is a baby too, right? This is your challenge. And so you get really, you fall in love with this process and you fall in love with this baby. And it's very easy to forget about I'm not saying the ones that really matter, but it's really easy to kind of put the priorities aside and focus on this. And what I have done poorly over the last 2 years is, or however you want to look at it. And I've really been business centric and my kids are only going to be small for a small period of time. They're only going to be in this magical age for a small subset of time. And I'll have plenty of time. I don't want to say plenty of time to make money, but I'll have plenty of time to come back to a career or to finish out a career, however you want to look at it. But I only get this chance once. And when you really start to pull that back and really think about the facts, my wife and I, we're both entrepreneurs. We're both, dead set in this stage of life of business. And we both made a decision like, hey, listen, like we're only going to get one crack at being parents at this age. And we need to make sure that we prioritize and execute on, allowing them to see life and allowing us to go experience the world together and experience travel together. And so we made that conscious effort, that household decision to go be parents and go show our kids life. And, we're early in the year, but we already have 4 or 5 trips planned out. We took them skiing for the first time this past weekend. And if you guys have not brought your kids skiing, I highly recommend doing so. But day one's brutal. I'm not going to lie. It's absolutely brutal because your kids are laying down in the mountain. They're crying, they're screaming, they're going through the process. But, day two, we got them all up and running. We got them up and down the mountain. It was a lot of fun. It was an unbelievable kind of journey together as a family, getting those kids and teaching them that skill.
Sal, how old are your kids? And if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
No, I don't mind asking. You can ask me anything. That's one thing about me. You can ask me anything. I am 42. If you can't tell, I'm losing my hair. That's how I know I'm like
you
really.
You still look damn sexy though, bro. You still.
Thanks, bro. I appreciate it. Yeah. Are you hitting on me? I mean, listen. I'll take it. So I'm 42. I have a 7-year-old son, and I have identical girls that are 6. So they're 14 months apart. So I live a wild race, man. Like it's a good testament to kind of how I live life. I only know one gear, and it's fifth, and I try to grab it and get after it. And so, 3 kids in 14 months has really set a challenge for me, but I'm here for the fight.
Yeah, I asked because you were mentioning this magical age when they're small, and I was wondering exactly what you meant by that. Was there like a specific? I'm curious because I love this kind of pivot to like really embrace these years now. Was there like a specific moment or a specific thing that happened maybe over the past 2 years where kind of open your eyes to like, hey, this whole business thing, like I got time, man. Like I'm 42, but I got decades to do that later. Was there anything that just kind of like opened your eyes to like, now's the time?
Yeah, there was a few moments and, I struggle and I think a lot of dads and a lot of parents struggle with this is, you want to provide for your family. So you understand the best way to provide is money, right? And so you have to go make money. And so I'm not one of these guys who says, oh, money doesn't matter. Money does matter. And it's a functional tool. It's a tool that you can utilize to give your kids experience if you use it correctly. And so I've always been torn with, you know, what is the perfect balance? And what I realized, there's no perfect balance. And time, if you let it, will slip away from you. And health is not a guarantee, and accidents do happen. And I had a friend of mine who suffered an accident. He had a stroke, and a young guy, he's one of my mentors. He's a younger mentor. And you realize, man, that could be me. It happened just like that. And I thought to myself, now I'm not going to sit there and lay in that bed and go, you know what? I should have done this. And the struggle of, you know, the sacrifice of whatever it is now today in business is not worth the price of regret, big picture and long term. And I'm not going to live that life of regrets of not, when I had the chance, not giving my kids the opportunity to go experience life as a family specifically, because I'm not guaranteed tomorrow, right? I'm not guaranteed to be 55. I'm not guaranteed to be 75. I'm only guaranteed what I got today. And that's when I start processing that, you know, that I'm not a spring chicken anymore. And, you know, my business mentor, who's 52, you know, who had that accident, you know, it's one of those things, like, you realize that could be me. And if I don't prioritize those decisions that are important to me, I'm going to live with a life full of regret. And I don't want to do that. And so I'm making decisions, and we're taking action today in our family to make those moves in the right direction.
Well, go ahead, Gabe.
Well, I was just going to say, was your wife like on board from day one? Because I know that Raquel, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I know that Raquel's, you know, an entrepreneur in her own right. Right. Like, she's not, you know, just, hey, stay at home and I'm going to, you know, if you say we're going to go travel, we're going to go travel. How was that conversation like? And was there even a moment of like, well, I'm doing my career thing over here, like, now might not be the time? Are you guys on the same page?
No, I mean, 100%. There's a conversation that happens in every bedroom and every kitchen across America. Is, you know, we start to build these little excuses. And you know, my wife's in the heart and she's a gangster. She's an unbelievable entrepreneur. And, you know, she's like, well, I got this weekend, it's booked. I got patients. I got this. I got the same thing that we all do. We all do it. And, you know, sitting down and just having the conversation, we say, listen, babe, like, you know, we need to prioritize this, and this is what it is. And when you have a good, strong marriage or a good, strong relationship, you know, being able to listen is a superpower. And she has that superpower. And always, you know, we have a really good communication chain. And, you know, when I kind of broke it down and said it, and she's like, well, all right, what weekend are we going to go? And it's, well, what are we going to move around to make these things happen? And that's where a lot of times people get hung up, is they have to move these artificially important things around to really make time for the important things. And what we are trying to do as a family is, like, what is priority to us? What is most important? Let's put that to the front of the bus and let's let everything else kind of fall in place. And travel and experiencing that time with our children right now is extremely important. And I know, you know, like my son's birthday this year, it falls on Cards Cubs weekend at Wrigley Field. And you know what, instead of giving him a birthday present, we're going to Chicago. We're going to Wrigley Field. Like, we're going to go experience baseball together. My girls, for their birthday, they want to go to the American Girl store and experience. Okay. We're going to pack up and that's where we're going to go. We're going to go experience life. And, you know, it's not about convenience. It's about prioritization and, you know, what's most important to us and how do we execute on it?
Dude, I love the prioritize and execute. You're using some of those echelon front terms. Yes. It's hard not to say that.
JP Janelle and JP's.
Yeah, JP and Leif. You know, your relationship with Raquel, obviously, I've known you for a really long time. We've spent a good amount of time together. And one of the things that, I mean, dude, that time in Cabo was just like so, anyways, we had a great time. And one of the things I've noticed from
that time in Cabo,
we had a great time in Cabo, but
before you get into it, this is how the world works. This is really cool. You know, so Jason came in and did my brother's podcast. He had just released his book. And you know, we'd met and we were sitting there talking and we were just kind of like, now mind you, never met, never crossed paths, both in a similar industry. And, we were done and we were chatting and, you know, I was like, hey, I'm actually getting ready to go to Cabo next week. And he's like, me too, you know? And he's like, where are you going? You know? And said the Pedregal. He's like, me too. You know, and we just happened to be going to the same destination at the same hotel at the same time. And I just met him 3 days prior. Like, I don't think it's by accident. Right. And so you learn to listen to those things. And Jason and I have maintained an unbelievable friendship over the last, 8 years, something like that, Jay.
Yeah.
And dude. Cool. I get to watch his family grow up. We maintain, you know, we get to do stuff like this, and it's been, life is neat, you know, but you got to listen to it. You got to pay attention to it. And I realize it's not by accident.
Well, and from my time with you, and something I try and pride myself on with our relationship too, is like trying to hold that like, like mine and Ashley's relationship, trying to hold that like as number one, because if we don't show up well for each other, then we can't show up well for the rest of the family. It's not that we're not prioritizing the kids, of course, but we need to be on in lockstep. We need to be communicating well. We need to make sure that we're focusing on our relationship as well, because if we just get focused on the kids or just get focused on the business, all of a sudden when our relationship starts to, you know, not derail a little bit, it impacts all of those other things as well. So I'm curious, like, especially with her being as entrepreneurial and so talented at what she does, and you obviously being really talented at what you do, are you guys implementing any specific things, or is it just like, hey, look, we got to communicate well? Anything in particular that shines out?
Yeah, no. I mean, there's a few things. One, we do communicate well. And I think a lot of times people they underwrite the power of communication, and they really don't understand how impactful it can be to life. And for that, you know, whether it's in business, whether it's in your friendships, but specifically with your marriage, is learn to communicate directly and compassionately, and understand that we have to be on the same page if we're going to row in the same direction and get to the same destination, right? We have to be on the same page. And if we're not, what happens is you get these conflicting messages, and it wrangles down, you know, through your children and just in life in general. Life is hard, man. It's a hell of a lot harder when you're not on the same page with your spouse. And so when you can learn that communication and getting on the same page up front, that's the most important piece you can do. And then how can you reinforce that by doing mandatory date nights and spending time together? So that travel that we have together as a family is not just us and the kids, it's us too. You know, and saying, you know, like, we don't like leaving our kids at home, but I understand the magical piece of having a great marriage and making sure that the romantic life is there, and making sure that the bond is still there, because it was us before we had kids. And when the kids go off to college and they go start their own lives, it's going to be us if we choose to make it that way. And it's a choice. And I think a lot of people where they stray is they say, well, this is the time to raise the kids and we'll come back to being us. And when they come back to being us, they're not the same us. And I don't want that. And my wife doesn't want that. And we've communicated that to each other. And it's important for us to prioritize each other and prioritize our marriage so that we can be on the same page, so we can raise good kids. And so that when they're, you know, when they're off and hopefully living their own lives in a positive manner, we can go back to maintaining our relationship, us, right? But we've never lost it in between. And so we've constantly maintained and put that effort forth to make sure that we're prioritizing each other.
I think that's the biggest thing. You know, it takes a lot of work. And I think sometimes it's easy to underestimate how much maintaining all relationships take work, especially the one with your wife, man. Like, you're both rowing, trying to figure stuff out. So we had our first son a year and 2 months ago at this point, and we're about to have our second right here, right after in April. So it's been like a very action packed, like, time of growth for the two of us. Yeah. And communication has never been more important, because, you know, kids don't come with instructions, man. Like, you know, this whole parenting thing, you read books. Luckily I have Jay, like I have really good other dads in kind of my circle that I've seen, and I try to model how I want to be based off of them. And I'm super lucky for that, but still, man, like, once push comes to shove, like, you're figuring it out. And I think that this early time is like ripe for resentment to build. It's ripe for, like, you know, who changed the last diaper, like this, that. There's everyone's getting pulled in different directions. And I think we've gotten through it relatively unscathed because we had the communication component really buttoned up, I think, before, but we've also like kept it as like a really strong priority now. But it's taken a lot of work.
Yeah. And I got news for you. It's going to take a lot more. And that's the piece where, you know, just think, you know, so you'll have two in 14 months. I had two in the coming down, you know, in that thing. And that's not, you know, I think it leads right into my point, is what you realize you're on the same team. It's not a competitive landscape, you know, and it's our job to win. It's not me versus you. It's us versus the world. And, you know, when you take that stance with your wife, you'd be surprised how powerful that person working behind you can be. And what I mean by that, behind, next to, however you want to look at it. I had an uncle who told me, you know, and this is a bit off topic, but I think it's extremely relevant, so stay with me here. He used to tell me, so I was 22, 23, 24 years old. you know, I'm living life, right? You know, at the time I was playing baseball still, you know, traveled the country. You know, I was figuring life out, doing young guy stuff, you know, being a dummy. And, you know, he used to tell me and look at my Aunt Dee, and he'd be like, "You'll learn this one day, but in order to be king, you got to have queen." And I'd be like, yeah, what, Uncle John, yeah, I'm going to go out to the bar tonight. And we'll find queen, you know. And that was, you know, that was my mentality of life at the time. And, you know, as I got older, I started to realize, like, this is right. And he used to tell me this, I mean, consistently, all the time. If you want to be king, she's got to be queen. And then he would finish. Then as I got older, he started finishing off. And he's like, you can't be king without queen. That's the whole trick, Sal. And if you want to really king, you have to find a queen that'll allow you to king. And when you start thinking about just that analogy, is understands like, you can't be king of your kingdom without a queen, without a true queen, somebody to go to battle with you, somebody to support you, somebody that's there for the fight with you. And so instead of fighting each other, you learn to fight life. And that king and queen analogy for me really set in as I got older, because it made sense to me. And, you know, because we, as males, we want to know all the answers, and we want to know, but the truth is like, we need help, you know, and that best help, at least in my experience, is the person you lay down with at night. It's the person that shares the same value structure and the same DNA in your children. And, you know, you have the same values. When you guys can fight together, not against each other, when I say together, we're fighting in the same direction, the fight becomes a lot easier because you're on the same page and we're working towards the same goal. And unfortunately, a lot of guys, they want to fight with their wife, or they want to prove that they're right versus not getting on the same page. And it makes life a hell of a lot tougher, man. And, you know, we're not meant to know all the answers. We're not meant to know, you know, every twist and turn. And to your point about Jay, is like, I have guys who are right out in front of me. You know, everybody thinks of a mentor as a mentor has to be 75 years old and live life perfectly. No, find strong men of character that are out in front of you a little bit, you know, and then find a few out in front of them and listen to them and bring them in and ask them for help. And what you realize is, much like, you know, Jason and I's relationship is, you know, that bond is real, man. When you find a good man, somebody you idolize, and you can communicate to him, you can tell him things that'll scare the hell out of you. You can tell him your insecurities. What you realize is you're not alone, and they've gone through that too. And if you find a good one, they'll help you get through it. And, you know, that piece of life, being a father, was very comforting for me, because I understood that, you know, I felt broken because I didn't know all the answers. That's the truth. But what I realized as I sit here as a 42-year-old dad, you know, I don't need to know all the answers, and it's okay not to know all the answers. And it's okay at times not to be okay. But what it's not okay is not to ask for help and not to look around and let somebody know, hey man, I'm struggling. You got any advice for me? Because that piece of life is extremely important, to make sure that we're learning from others who have gone through that battle, and who can help us maybe, you know, make sense of sometimes the noise.
The king and queen thing just like hits home so hard for me right now. Like, just so hard, because you're right, man. I mean, everything else you're saying, obviously I agree with, but the king queen thing, I think if you visualize like that, like, you're right, man. Like, we have a newsletter coming out, that just came out actually when this was released. And it's like, my dad would always tell me, like, the expectation should be that life will be hard. And this way, if you expect that, then when the times are good, dude, you can really embrace it. You can really enjoy it, but life's going to be tough, man. You're going to get different challenges from, you know, whatever, raising kids to a slew of other things. Right. And when you have someone like as close to you like that, like that's in your home, dude, I just, that just super resonates with me, because like Ash and I, we've definitely like gotten closer through trauma, through challenges together. And like, I don't know how I'd be able to handle certain situations if I didn't have her like as our team, you know. And I hadn't thought about it, like the way you described it was just different than the way that I was thinking about it. So I appreciate that, Sal.
Well, I mean, but even go back to your book, right? You know, like when Ashley stepped up, like when you were broke, like Ashley stepped up. That's what you need. Like, and that, I think, unfortunately, like in today, you know, like, you know, we're supposed to step up. Well, sometimes we don't. And sometimes we need help stepping up. And much like Ashley, Raquel, you know, I was, you know, she's my gangster. Like, Rocky knows, man. She knows, like, if I'm off kilter, like, she'll step up. And that's the piece that you're talking about. That's the magic. You know what I mean? That's the bond. And in that moment, it's not romantic. It's not a conversation. It's an action. And the action is what creates this, you know? And so I know when I close my eyes that I'm laying down next to a woman who's got my back. And I'm gonna tell you, like, if you want to unleash the power of a man, give him that at night, from the standpoint of making sure that he can go to war with knowing that somebody's got his back. That's, it's a very powerful place to live life.
I love that you call her a gangster. I fucking love that, man. Yeah. Yeah, dude.
You got her.
We're also lucky, man. It's like the biggest strength you can have is having found that person and having her by your side, man. It's easily the biggest tailwind you can have. It's funny hearing you talk about, you know, like now 42-year-old dad, like it's okay that I don't know some things. I went for a run this morning, and preparing for this, I was trying to listen to like the most recent podcast that I could find with you. And it was with this young kid, Real Conversations. Yeah. And when he started and said he was 22, it was funny when you called him, "Hey, dude, you're a baby. Like, I know you think you know you have it all figured out, but trust me, you don't. And when you get to my age, like, you realize that you really don't have anything figured out." And me and Jason have talked about this, man. Like, I remember, I think right around, let's see, I was a senior in college. So probably right around 21 is when you reach peak, like, I know everything.
Oh, hell
And
yeah.
it's so funny to think about it now. Oh, man. Anyway, that was cracking me up.
It's true, though, right? Like, you know, and I think that's, you know, and I kind of use this as almost like a grounding stone for a lot, because I try to help as many young entrepreneurs as I can. I love, you know, the big thing about now is like, how do you coach through business? And everybody's charging to coach in business. And I just believe there's like a philanthropic message of business. Like, my job is to go help as many young people as I can. I can't help everybody, but I do my best. And when I was 35, we had a hell of a business. You know, we were doing well. And I thought, man, you know what? I got this thing figured out. 37, I'm a great business guy. You know, ask me, I know the answer. At 42, I don't know shit. That's what I realized. And, you know, and it's a very humbling place to be, because, you know, hell, I'm more afraid now at 42 than I was at 35, you know, because I realized, like, shit, I don't know anything, you know? And so, you know, but it's okay. And I think, to Jason's point, that the lesson that he learned from his dad is, you know, life, the expectation, it's hard. Business is hard. Marriage is hard. Being a dad is hard. Once you digest that and understand that it's going to be hard, everything else falls into place. Like, okay, it's meant to be uncomfortable. And this is why I love the motto, train hard. But this is why I also train hard. This is why you sign up for big things and try to attack them, is the more comfortable you get being uncomfortable, the more you train to be physically uncomfortable, the more normal it becomes, the more that's your average. Right. And so, you know, as I realize, like, I've gone through some tough, you know, proverbial tough things, not really challenging life things in general, but that's what it's supposed to be. And when you understand that that's what it's supposed to be, it gets a lot more comforting. It's like, all right, well, when you touch the stove, it's hot. Well, guess what? It's supposed to be hot. If you touch it again, it's gonna be hot again, you know? And so the more I realize that it's uncomfortable down in those zones, the better off and more comforting it becomes.
I was going to ask you, Sal, something that's been brought up recently on this show is this idea of homeschool. I'm just curious, homeschool versus like your more, I guess, acceptable. I don't even know what the term would be, right? Like with your kids, because Enzo's 7, right? So he's in like third, he's in like second grade, right? Or something like that.
He's a young one. So he's a late June birthday. So we have like the in-between, we have like the in-between kids. We have August and June. So I have a first grader and a kindergartner, but no, listen, I am probably way more or way less politically correct than you guys probably have to be by general. So I'm okay talking about the homeschool, not homeschool, public school, whatever it is. So I think for me, the environment in which we subject our kids to is probably the most crucial decision you can make outside of the environment you create inside your home. And, you know, I don't know the right answer, right? I can just tell you my experience. And when, after COVID broke off and everything was kind of crazy, we actually moved. We moved our entire life outside the city, and we went 25 minutes out, and we found what we thought was the right place for our kids. And, you know, what we realized is that maybe some people were pandering to the opportunity that, oh, these kids don't have to wear masks, let's open their doors and we'll get more students to come in. It was a great move. However, you know, it wasn't the right place for our kids either. And so we had to make another move, and it's tough. And, you know, here we are, we moved our entire lives, our house, all to find a epicenter of kind of normalcy for our children. And it wasn't the right move. We made the wrong move. So we had two options. We can either sit there and complain and bitch about it, or we could make a decision and make another move. So we packed them all up out of school and moved them to a different school. And for us, what we found best, and I think homeschooling for certain people is a great option. I think for what we found best for our core values for what works for our family is we found a very small Christian-based faith school, and it's been phenomenal for our children. They've really pushed on our kids from an educate. It's a traditional education. You know, they learn to write cursive, no tablets. It's very, what I would say old school. And we're extremely happy. I mean, my first grader came home with homework and I thought to myself, holy hell, my kids got homework, you know, but what you realize is that those kids under pressure and when asked to rise to the challenge, my kids are doing really well. They're performing at a much higher level because they're being challenged. You know, they're learning faith, which I feel a great deal of obligation to. As I get older, I start to realize, you know, how important faith is, at least to me and my family, and how our children, I think, should be raised with some type of substructure of religion. And you know what? What was a scary decision? We made a move, and it was the wrong move. We made a pivot, right? And we landed right where we're supposed to be. And you know, I think for us and our family, it was a great move. The right decision was to make a move. We made the wrong move at first, but we moved again and ended up in the right spot. And I think everybody's going to have their own little comfort zone for what's best for them. But I think the lesson there, hopefully for the audience, is ignoring it and acting like it's going to go away or just be okay is not the right answer. You know, as a dad specifically, you got to step up and stand up for your children, man. That's, you got one obligation on life right now. And if you're not going to stand up for your children, which a lot of dads don't, they just back down and listen to the noise. Like, I'm not that guy. I'll walk right in the office and I'm not an asshole. I don't go over the top, but the uncomfortable conversation I am 100% comfortable having. And when it comes to my children and how they're going to be raised and what they're going to be presented and are they going to put a litter box in the corner of the room? That shit ain't going to happen in my house, you know? And so it's not going to happen where my kids go to school either. And I stand up for them. And what I realize is other dads are really appreciative that I would do that and that I do that. And where there's one, then there's two. And where there's two becomes four. And I challenge all the dads, is like, those are your kids, man. And you don't, that doesn't mean you need violence and you have to go in and threaten them and sue them. That means that there's never a wrong time to do the right thing. And remember, most people are afraid to have a tough conversation. And the ones that people respect the most are the ones that'll lay that law down and have it. And if I have to take my kids out of school because it's what's best for them and it's inconvenient for me, well, then they're coming out of school because that's what's going to happen. And so that's how I look at that entire situation. Fair?
Fair. I love that because, I mean, I can relate to that. You know, my kids go to a private Catholic school and I like to think that there's some old school values there for sure. We're generally pretty happy with it. But to your point, like, dude, you got to advocate for them hard. You got to go speak up. And then if, you know, you don't want to be one of those guys who just talks crap out of school, which by the way, we don't, but if we did, I wouldn't want to be that guy who just shows up at the, you know, whatever, and never actually tries to contribute. Right. So I'm a part of the men's club. I'm a part of the different organizations. I'm a part of like providing feedback to the board. Because otherwise nothing will ever change, right? And you're not going to get this evolution because you're not getting any feedback. They're in their own echo chamber. They're not hearing from anybody else. But I like the fact that you moved. And then, so did you actually, I knew you had a new house. Did you move and then literally that house, literally move again?
No, what we did is we moved and then put them in a new school. And then we pivoted out of the school and moved to a different school.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think that that's perfectly fair. Like, I think you summarized it really well. Like, just because it's inconvenient for you, if it prioritizes the kids and they're going to be in a better position, like, you got to do it, especially now when they're younger, because then they don't develop all these friendships and stuff. Then you pull them out of the school. That's tough.
And when we moved, so it kind of makes, you know, like we have a, you know, our headquarters here at HQ. My old house is only, you know, 5-6 minutes down the road. I moved 25 minutes further west to kind of get outside from the noise. Right. And that's what I wanted to. So we made a big inconvenient move. So now instead of commuting 5 minutes every day, I got to commute 25 to 30 minutes every day back and forth, you know? And I know that's in your guys' land, that's, you know, a chip shot, but for here, that's like, you know, like that's a big, people ask me like, hey, what airline flies in every day? You know, that's a big thing out in Missouri. And so, you know, you're realizing like, you know, we made an inconvenient move for our family because we wanted that substructure of unity, that was a priority to us. And, you know, and that piece, I'm extremely thankful that we both had the courage to say, hey, all right, we're going to uproot our entire ecosystem and go out there and do what we feel at the time is best for our children.
I think that at the end of the day, it just comes to being involved, right? Like whether you're making the decision to homeschool, to, you know, find a small private school, to make it a faith-based school, it's just not taking the path of least resistance, which is just like, well, they're zoned for this and starting kindergarten in September and that's it, you know, and bring back good grades. And, you know, as long as there's nothing like super alarming happening, like it's all good, your hands off. I think that that's unfortunately where a lot of people fall. And I know that, you know, we say this a little bit from, you know, we're very fortunate that we have the time and ability to go out there and be super involved or find these schools, but everyone can be involved to some extent, everyone, right? We've talked about in the past how important it is also to like, who are the coaches that are interacting with your kids, right? Like making sure that you know what values everyone has that's teaching any sorts of lessons to your kids is so, so, so important. And I'm obviously, you know, quite a few years removed from making those decisions, but super, super important, right? Not just the lessons that you're imparting on your kids, but coaches, teachers, everyone else that's going to have an impact. It's so important.
Yeah. And I mean, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
Just the environment that you put your children in is your responsibility. And ignorance, to your point, just, well, that's their responsibility. That's loser mentality, you know? And when you come back in 12 years and your kids are struggling with a whole bunch of, you know, mixed messaging, it's likely because you weren't involved. And I think, Gabe, your point's perfectly put, is everything that you have that's valuable in your life is tough. Everything, including your children. And when you make those decisions, like they're tough, they're inconvenient decisions. You getting up and running at 6 o'clock in the morning, that's a decision. It's an inconvenient decision that you make. You could lay in bed, but you're deciding to get better, you know, and those things that we value through struggle are what really end up shaping us into who we are as humans. And so, you know, when I think about our children, there's no excuse, you know, and I think about this with youth sports, and you guys probably experienced, Jason, I know you, baseball parents in the Midwest are nuts. Like, they're nuts.
even at his age, at like seven, they're nuts.
Enzo got cut from a team. I laughed. I'm like, he is 6 years old, man. What are you cutting him for? You know, and I'm laughing like in my head. And, but it was a great opportunity, you know, that he got cut literally 6 years old. Like 6 year olds don't even feel ground balls. And, you know, you think about that and it's like, that's a good opportunity. So now we got involved and we have a great group of parents, and I have, you know, we have great families. We're prioritizing, you know, that teamwork first. We're prioritizing fundamentals first. If you've never read, and this is for every single dad, coach, human on planet Earth, mom, whoever, if you're coaching, Mike Matheny he's an all-star catcher for the Cardinals, manager for the Cardinals. He's got 20 years and plus in the bigs. He wrote a letter called the Matheny Manifesto. Have you guys read this?
No, but I'm going to write it down right now.
Not write it down. Print it out. Live by it and hand it to all your friends and family and tell as many people as you can. Because the Matheny Manifesto, in my brain, having played underneath this man, he's one of the best men that I've ever met. He is a true, when I say locker room leadership, dude, this dude's a tough dude, sets the standard, holds the standard, ran the locker room, ran a tough club, but he wrote a letter to the parents, and that's the Matheny Manifesto.
I have seen this. I'll have to go look. It's like he gave it to the parents before the season started. Just say, hey, these are the expectations.
100%. Your kids are going to be on time. You're not going to be in my dugout. We're not traveling. We're not going to win every baseball game. We're going to teach these kids how to play the game. Like how he laid it down, to me, is the principles that sport should teach our kids, not screaming and yelling and cutting them in sixth grade and figuring out if we can win our 10U tournament every weekend we go out and play. Like, listen, you're not going to meet somebody who believes in winning more than I do, but you're also not going to meet somebody who understands the importance of character and teamwork and substructure of what happens in a locker room and the importance of it. And so I think the Matheny Manifesto did just an absolutely phenomenal job of laying that down. And I think it's important for every young parent to be able to read that.
So is it also, just because I was looking it up, is it also a book? Like, are those two separate things? Yeah, he has a book, and then there's an actual letter.
Yeah, there's two separate things. So there's a book, and then what the principle of the book is based off of the letter that he wrote to the parents, and then kind of how it parlays out.
Got it. Okay, cool.
Great dude.
Sal, I know, you know, because you've played baseball in the minor leagues, right? And got injured, right? And obviously now that you're with your children, I'm curious how that works. So one of the gentlemen here, he played for the Red Sox, is one of the gentlemen that in the Los Gatos League, Kevin Youkilis. Have you heard that? Do you know that? Or am I totally?
Anyone that knows baseball knows Kevin Youkilis, Jason. Yeah, Kevin
Youkilis. Yes. I mean, that's back playing the Cardinals in like 06. Yeah, I know. I mean, I don't know him, but I know him, of course.
So he's one of the dads on the team that Caden's on right now. And I find it to be super interesting. So Caden, you know, he's on a, he's on like a 10U team, right? So like they're old enough where like they kind of get it, but they're not, you know. And it's so funny because you'll see him sitting in the either, you know, either as like an assistant to the assistant coach position or just like out in the, you know, field, just chilling. And he doesn't like yell. He doesn't get all excited. He just be like, hey man, like just scoot over a little bit. Or he doesn't say anything at all. He just sits there and just chills. And I watched the way that he connects with the boys. Right. And I'm just sitting there like, you see some other parents who didn't get nearly as far in the sports as he did. And they're grinding, right? Like God, da, da, da. And you just see him and he's just low key. And I wonder if that's a byproduct of just him knowing that like, dude, this is a long journey. These kids need to love the game and I'm not going to be that guy. You know what I mean? Like it's just been fascinating for me to watch.
You just smacked it right in the face. I mean, anybody who's done anything for a long period of time, the only reason that you can do it for a long period of time is because you love it. And if you teach these kids not to love it at a young age, because they're getting yelled at all the time, who the hell is going to want to go to the field to get yelled at? Nobody. And you know, we have a great fortune. So same thing. We have 5 Division I baseball dads on our team. Paul Goldschmidt, who's like he was the league MVP last year. His kids on our team. We all have a very similar mentality. Like, hey, these boys are going to love the game. Like, we're going to lose. Well, we're going to win, and we win way more than we lose. But the kids are going to learn all the positions. They're going to have fun. We're going to take it serious. You know, they're not going to. They don't throw their bats. They don't throw their helmets. Like that stuff. That's what we take serious. Striking out. Guess what? Life. It's going to tell you that you're going to strike out a lot. You're going to fail 7 out of 10 times. And if you fail 7 out of 10 times in baseball, you're in the Hall of Fame, man. Like, failure is part of the deal. And so why would it get all worked up over a 10U or a 7U or 8U? You watch these dads yell at each other. And all I think to myself, like, man, you got life all mixed up, bro. Like, you're upside down in the wrong categories. Because what matters is if you teach the kids the game and you teach them to have fun, when you can cross strong skill sets over with a great deal of enjoyment and fun, the ride is what happens afterwards. You know, if they hate every day going to the field or going to the yard, they're not going to do great. That's just the nature of the game. And so they have to have fun. They have to learn to play the game the right way. And they have to understand that failure is part of the deal. So what am I going to get all upset for? I failed. Hell, you know what I mean? I fail every day. Do you fail every day? If your teammates came in and yelled at you every single day for every single mistake you made, you wouldn't want to go to work either. You know, and that process of teaching these boys to love the game, I think is extremely important. And when you take a professional like Youkilis and you put him in there, he also realizes that 10U baseball is not life, man. Like, it's all good, bro. Like, you can go drink your beer and go sit back down and relax. Go get on YouTube. I don't care what the hell you do, but stay out of these kids. And so, you know, and I think that's what a true professional understands. And, you know, the further along you get to in baseball, you know, I would say the more calm it becomes, because you got to be professional. If you either do your job, you do it well, you can stay. And if you do it really well, you make a lot of money. But if you don't do your job and you don't do it well, they get rid of you. You know, and it's a pretty easy process.
We've talked about on the podcast a couple times now how success in so many different facets of life ends up just being a war of attrition. There's plenty of people that have the skills, the raw talent, whatever. They just give up too soon. And then there's other people that just like literally won't give up and know that it takes a long time. And what I love about baseball, and I'm a huge baseball fan, never played, but I'm a huge baseball fan. Unfortunately for me, I'm a Mets fan. Yeah. But one thing that I've heard you talk about before, and I love about the sport, aside from like all the games within the game, I think it's a beautiful sport. But I think that the fact that it's such a sport of failure, the fact that like literally what you said, right? Like the best batter in the league is going to 7 times out of 10 not get on base. Like there's such a beautiful lesson to that, because it's the closest thing to what real life is like, right? Like, how do you handle a slump? How do you handle, you know, a golden sombrero on a day and come back the next day? Like, dude, the best players will have days that like you just get embarrassed out there. And do you come back, or do you let that thing spiral into a 3 week slump. And I think that that's what makes the difference. So I can't wait. I can't wait to like have my kid in baseball and dive into that world and, handle it how you guys are talking about it. Because yeah, man, it's enjoying the game and there's so many lessons to it. So I've heard you say that before, and I love that about the sport.
Yeah, I mean, baseball is really good to me. It taught me a lot of things. Failure being one of them. But, there's a lot to be learned in a long, grueling, you play 162 baseball games in the summer and 185 days. Like, it's a lot. You know what I mean? It's a lot of work. And when you're there and you realize it's about the team and it's not necessarily about you and that everybody's a failure, right? It's not just you. And so like there's just a lot of life lessons that are learned in the poetry of baseball. And I'm very fortunate to have had, mentors in front of me and people that taught me, the game to play it the correct way. And I was able to go, maybe not as far as some, but, further than most. And, I just find the lessons and the ability to cross-relate them extremely, extremely valuable to life. And every time I come back to one, it's about failure. It's failure and what you learn. You make an error, you got two options. You can stand out there and get better, or what are you gonna do, quit? You're gonna walk off the field. And baseball doesn't allow you that opportunity. And if you act that way, you're not around it very long. And so by virtue, it forces you to continue to compete. And I think, not I think, I know a lot of the success that I've had personally and that we've had as a business is like, it's not, I mean, dude, I get kicked all the time. It's understanding that everybody else is getting kicked too. I got one option. I can go back out and field a ground ball. I got to go back up and take another at bat. And so, whether you had the golden sombrero, which for most people they don't know is
What
four
is
strikeouts.
that?
It's if you go up, you're 0-for-4 and you get four strikeouts, it's the golden sombrero. It's there's a lot of games within the game in baseball. And so the cure to golden sombrero is six Coors Originals. So you got to go find six yellow bellies, they call them. And so if you have, at least when I played, if you had a golden sombrero that night, like the only cure to a golden sombrero is six yellow bellies. The problem that I would have is I would go drink 12. And so it still wouldn't fix the golden sombrero. I'd probably come back and hit it again the next day, but that's because I was seeing two balls, not one. And and that lesson of life, it's beautiful, man. And I think all too often, specifically in social media land, life's meant to be perfect and you're supposed to know all the answers and you're gonna win every day. You're not gonna win every day. You're gonna get your ass beat every day. That's the only thing that I understand to be true. It's how you respond to the ass beating that measures the difference between the winners and the losers.
What type of relationship, so you have a unique vantage point. So Enz is a little bit older. Obviously, you have the twins. And what type of relationship do you think they're going to have? And how are you fostering that differently? So, I saw you went hunting for, if I'm not mistaken, first time with your son, or at least harvested a deer, which I was like, dude, I was like so fired up for you, bro. And so those are obviously things that are a little bit different, playing sports, all that same kind of stuff that we're trying to do. But with the girls, I'm curious, like, what types of things are you trying to get ahead of having twin girls? I just feel like they could either be like the ride or die together, or they could just be so competitive that their relationship, I don't know. It seems like those dynamics need to be really closely checked out and like fostered, but or is that not really a big deal? Like, are you
No,
thinking through that lens at all,
So for the audience, I have identical girls on top of it, and so they, I mean, identical siblings are really interesting because same DNA. Most people don't know that. So they have the exact same DNA. But when the egg splits, they're, said to basically left brain, right brain. So you're getting the, ex it, and it's an unbelievable social experiment, right? Because you have the same mom, same dad, same brother, same dog, same house, same car they go to school in, same classroom for our kids, two totally different children. And it's cool, but what I try to do, and I could do a better job, but I try to foster each individual relationship. So I don't treat it as, Enzo and the girls. I treat it as Enzo, Francesca, and Isabella. And what I try to do is spend time individually with each child, so that one, we have a special bond so that I can have that father, son, father, daughter relationship. But secondarily, it allows them to not have to compete for time or compete against each other. Now, I think by nature, they're my children, and my wife's super competitive too. So there's gonna be some hard fought battles in the house. I will tell you that, my girls are probably gonna be pretty tough because Enzo picks on them, but they don't back down. They get back in that ass. So it, we got a strong competitive house, but you know, I try to spend that time individually building each one of them up with their own strengths, and educating them all, because they are a little bit better in some different ways and in all their own unique ways. But I just try to spend that time with them. And, you know, it's kind of to Gabe's point, like I try to commit to the time and make sure that I prioritize that, so that they can have the confidence. Cause I think that's what they need, right? They need that individuality confidence to show that they're not always going to be together, or they don't always have to compete.
That's a good way. I don't have twin girls, right? But I totally get because I would think like it naturally, the easy thing would be, hey girls, let's go to the mall or whatever, or hey girls, let's go do this. Like the easy thing, right? Like, but the hard thing would be, hey, let's go, you know, we're going to set up this time to go do this thing as an individual. I think that's super smart, man. I mean, obviously, like I said, I'm not in those same shoes, but it seems to make sense for me from an outsider's perspective, because they're also not just like always attached, right? Because then all of a sudden it's like, they're probably already having like similar friends. They're going to similar parties. They're probably already doing all these things together. It's like, how much time are we able to separate apart? I imagine at an earlier age, it'll help them like have their own identity instead of just like together. So cool, man. Good on you. Those are the kind of things I'm curious about, right? Cause I don't have that same situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, how do you build the confidence? I mean, I think in life, that's where you come back to. It's confidence, and you have to build it. It's nobody just giving it, you have to build it. And so, you know, just trying to take the intentionality around, hey, how do I build the confidence on each one of my children so that they can go live their own lives? Because to your point, you know, sometimes twins, you know, this is how they live life. You know, they marry other twins and they live in the same house and they grow up. And I think our girls will have a really strong bond, but my goal is to not have that, right? And my goal is to have them have their own individual lives and their own personalities so they can go live life.
So I have a question that I'm curious about here. So I was perusing through the New York Times, as one does. And
perusing, is that a word? Or did you say
cruising? No, and I wasn't perusing it. I just, it came up on the feed. I don't peruse the New York Times. But I saw this headline, and I think it ties into some of the things that we were talking about, because, you know, I think the common theme is everything meaningful is hard, right? And if we want to prepare for that, we have to put ourselves in intentionally hard situations to make us more resilient, to train for those things. I mean, that's why we're so big on fitness being, you know, an avenue for that, for us to train hard. So the headline reads, and I don't know if you saw it, 75 Hard has a cultish following. Is it worth all the effort? And the article goes on to essentially say that 75 Hard is too extreme. You know, it's counterproductive. It's, you know, all of these things that essentially, you know, beware. And for people that don't know, 75 Hard is, and correct me if I'm wrong here at all, but it's a challenge that I've done as well, that I know is made very popular by your brother, Andy, and everything you guys do at First Form. And it, you know, it is very tough in that, you know, it's not your usual 30-day challenge. 75 days is a long freaking time. And, you know, there's a diet component, there's two 45-minute workout components, there's a reading component, and a hydration component. So you're tackling all these different things. And if you actually like stick to that for 75 days, like you will absolutely see progress in, you know, body composition, in confidence, in a bunch of things, but it's hard. Yeah. Where do you think this comes from? Cause you see a lot of it now, right? Is things are too extreme, you know, that's too hard, like so on and so forth. Like, how did we get to the point where this is a critique of something that I'm sure you've seen have helped thousands of people?
Yeah. I mean, millions at this point, right? I mean, it's one of maybe the most popular fitness challenge since Body for Life. So it's one of those things that, but it's not a fitness challenge. That's where the irony comes in. It's a mental toughness challenge. And I think, you know, when you really pull it back and look at it, you know, people don't criticize, you know, average or below average things for the most part, right? They criticize things that scare them, things that make them, you know, nervous. Monday morning quarterback type stuff. And what I, you know, it's not for everybody. And that's the beauty. It's not saying, hey, everybody should do this and achieve this. It's the people who want to make the most or try to build mental toughness and understand that they're capable of more than they think they are. This is a pathway that will allow you to do so if you challenge yourself. And if you complete it, you're going to find that on the backside, you're going to see that you are stronger mentally than you were when you got started. That's it. And I think that scares people, right? Because when you look at, you know, the people who write these articles, we always laugh because like That's great press for us. It's not designed to be for everybody. This is not like the vanilla milkshake for everyone. This is like, hey, listen, you want to see what you're made of. And if you think you got it in you, let's go see what you got. And I mean, I can tell you, riding 100 miles with Jason Kleep on a rocky road is a hell of a lot harder than doing 75 hard from that standpoint, right?
Hey, those PB&J sandwiches, I still think about them.
They're good, man. But, you know, when you intimidate people, the first thing that they do in today's world is throw stones. And I'd be willing to bet that the author didn't do it. And usually when the authors do things like that, they will write an article that says, listen, at first I was very skeptical. On the backside, what I found is that it's extremely effective in helping me transform my mental and physical self. And so, you know, that's why I love life of experience. And this goes back to, like, you know, showing our kids the world, traveling, experience. Like, what does the sand feel like beneath your toes? And how does the ocean smell? You can't write about it. You can only experience it. And, you know, in today's society, we're very quick to judge through a screen, but we're very, very slow to act on what it takes to actually do the work. And so, you know, from that standpoint, I would challenge whomever, author, whoever, like, hey, listen, give it a run, see what you got. And, you know, maybe it's not for you, but maybe it'll change your life. And without experiencing it, you won't know. And that part of it, Gabe, you know, if you have done it, and Jason, I don't think you have done it, have you?
Not the way it's supposed to be done. So no, yeah. I cannot.
That's all right. That's all right. Jason McCarthy is doing it right now, but our mutual GoPro. And you know, and I think from that standpoint, is it impossible? No, hundreds of thousands of people have done it. You see all the before and afters. They're fabulous from a physical standpoint of change. But what you don't see is what happens up here, you know, the struggle of, you know what, man, I kind of want that donut, or I want that beer, or you know what, nobody's going to see me if I don't actually walk this, you know, this last 45 minutes outside. Nobody's going to know, but you know. And that's the beauty about life, man. Like, when you really genuinely got to hold yourself accountable to doing some hard stuff, and you allow yourself to progress and push through it, not only are you capable of a lot more, but when you actually do the work, the results speak for themselves. And that's what I love about it. That's what I love about fitness. That's what I love about life, is the work. It cannot be replaced. And if you do the work and you do it correctly and you do it with the right intention, the results will take care of themselves. And all too often we find this today's society is, I'm broken, or I'm different, or they have it easier than me, or they were, you know, whatever, raised with this or without that, without trying themselves. And, you know, when you think about life, like, we all have a different starting point, but we're all capable of making decisions to get us further down the road than where that starting point got us going from. And all too often in today's world, we play victim. You know, it's like, well, that's not fair, or that's not for me. And quite honestly, the best thing we got about, you know, we were raised with parents, and we got a dad, come from a blue collar family, raised in the middle of America. Like, quite honestly, I don't give a shit what you think. I give a shit what you do. And so come on out and let's see what you're made of. And so that piece for me, I love. It's our blue collar roots. And, you know, I think the proof's in the pudding. It's in the results are in the work.
Yeah, the results are unfudgeable, right? No, I love that, man. Yeah, yeah. It's funny that I stumbled on that like yesterday, not really on purpose. I was like, I'm going to ask him about this and see what he thinks. But I love that answer, man.
First you'd be in the New York Times or Forbes, you know, and it would come across, and, you know, nature of business, you're like scared. You're like, oh shit, like, what's going to happen?
Right. But right.
Then you realize, like, you know what? Listen, people are going to write things. People are going to say things. And this is life. You know, you're going to go out on your own, and you're going to try new things, and they're going to scare other people, and they're going to make them. But you don't become a great sailor by sailing in smooth seas, right? Like, you got to try something new, you know, like, and you got to get out there in the storm sometimes. You got to see what you're made of. You got to figure it out. And those are the people that they talk about. Those are also the people they write books about. So, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, for us, I don't care about what the 50,000 people say in the stands. I'm more concerned with what the 50 people on the field are doing.
We got to decide what our next thing is. You know, I know, like, did you end up doing a half marathon ruck?
I've done a couple of marathon rucks. Marathon. What do you got? I mean, listen, I'm just waiting for you to come to Missouri. That's all.
Hey.
I mean, I can come out there, but.
Hey. You know. We did the century ride, which was a cool achievement. I was thinking, dude, like a 10 mile sled push would be gnarly, or something sled pushy.
I mean, I saw the little uphill one you did a couple weeks ago. That one looked gnarly.
Yeah. Hey, with all the men's club, bro, we took over the street, but everybody loves us. There's a lot of, everybody likes the idea of you'd think.
July?
July?
No, do you know why?
No. Well, I'll tell you in a second. I want to hear what you have to say. We're pushing these sleds up this steep hill. This woman comes out on her balcony. She has a cup of coffee in her, like on a morning, like whatever. I'm thinking, oh man, she is going to scream at us. Cause we didn't have any music or anything, but we were kind of, huffing and puffing. Yeah. She just looks at us and I just look at her. I was like, I'm terribly sorry. Like, good morning. I hope you have a great day. She just looks at me. She's like, I love what y'all are doing. Keep doing what you're doing. And I was like, all right.
Listen, man, people admire people doing hard shit. It's been that way for 1,000 years. It's going to be that way for another 1,000 years. And there's always going to be people writing about it, throwing stones while you're doing it. But the truth is they're not willing to do it themselves. And that admirable piece, like that's what makes, that's what makes weak men uncomfortable, is when strong men are willing to train to do things that weak men are not. And I'm not one of these guys that says, oh, we got to go to men's camp and pour water over each other and go sit in the, that's not what I'm saying. You're doing hard shit. You know what I mean? And hard shit is admirable. And when a female is watching you, and she's probably thinking in her head is like, these are the guys that protect our community. These are the guys that are going to stand up for us. These are the men that are training and willing to do what most men are not. It's always been admirable. And I think that's the part that's awesome. But I will tell you, in August, if you got something up your sleeve, I might have something for you.
Well, sounds like we might need to hear about what this something is. I'll message you later. I want to hear what this is. I'm always down for a good time. You know that.
I know. I just don't know. You know what I mean? Like, you got that ocean in your backyard. You better start using it.
Oh boy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, Sal, we want to be sensitive.
Muscular, dense people.
We want to be sensitive of your time. Dude, I really appreciate you. I always loved connecting with you. I just think that you're one of the guys that just, you live by a code, and I just appreciate it. You do what you say and say what you do. And I just, it means a lot to me through our friendship. So I want to thank you for the time today. Gabe, anything to kind of close us out?
No, man. Likewise. We've had conversations in the past. We've done podcasts in the past, and I'm always like ready to run through a brick wall afterwards. So I hope that the listeners get the same, but I appreciate it, man.
Well, listen, I appreciate you boys and the opportunity, to spend some time with you guys, and the feeling's mutual. It's definitely a two-way street. Life's cool, and it introduces you to cool people, and I'm proud to call you guys friends and have you in my corner. And you guys know, is there anything I can ever do for you, the audience, whatever, I'm happy to help. But I appreciate you boys, and keep doing that good work, and getting them men in good shape. Train hard.